to MGO Radio 9.3. No, 3 point, whatever. It doesn't matter. Who cares? I'm Ace. Wait, no. I'm Brian. That's Ace.
Nice. The last handbender. Yeah.
Do you introduce yourself to girls as the last handbender ever?
Rarely.
Rarely? So it has happened.
You know, every once in a while.
Seriously?
No. Are you kidding?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, that's my Tinder handle. Last handbender.
That'd be good, right?
I don't know if that would work so well.
That would work. People would be like, oh, that guy can bend some hams. Anyway, it's Air Force Week, and we are really struggling for things to talk about.
In case you cannot tell already.
We have a combat sports segment that we might have. No, we don't. I don't really know what to say.
We could.
Except the WWE is terrible. Because I have to watch it because of my wife. But I don't anymore because it's that bad.
So we've covered that.
We had the MMA things.
Yeah, I was, you know, the UFC kind of stinks now, but
yeah,
it's always kind of stunk.
Oh, we'd like to thank our sponsors. You have to read
the
sponsors.
Yeah, we should do that.
You have the list.
We'd like to thank our sponsors. The Bow Store, Underground Printing, The Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshore Lending, Human Element, Lantana Hummus, Michigan Law Grand, Deo Bookkeeping, Ann Arbor Elder Law, and Peak Wealth Management.
Very sonorous.
Thank you.
I ran into the Ann Arbor Elder Law guy at Ricewood.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, thanks for coming out for our preseason thing. And then I realized that he was a sponsor. And then I yelled out to a room full of people, Ann Arbor Elder Law, because I had forgotten his name.
Reed.
And then I remember that his name was Reed.
Thank you for sponsoring and coming to Football Eve, Reed of Ann Arbor Elder Law.
I mean, he's done like a gimmicky top five with us.
I know.
And I was just like, oh, yeah, that person who looks very familiar.
This is our continuing just like telling people why they should sponsor us by telling them how terrible it is to sponsor us.
It's you know, if you do sponsor us, we know that you have a thick skin.
Yes.
And you've proven that. Are we adjusting our oh, yes. Yes, we have
our live stream display. The Lantana hummus should be on camera,
so,
but it's
so down. Seth buys a camera, and I'm like, one of our running jokes is that we have a very visual podcast, and
yes,
this ruins it entirely.
Yes, this completely obliterates the joke.
So we've
now the great Halifax explosion is going down.
We've taken, well, that's appropriate.
It is.
That's that's Bacon's latest book, by the way. He had like two going at the same time. We should talk about football.
We should. That is what we're here for.
So I went back over the Cincinnati tape, and of course we do have to revisit the great Spate Takeageddon of the week.
Oh, man. The takes.
I mean,
they were strong.
We talked about this on our Monday podcast. I mean, have our opinions altered at all? I mean, you went back, you did a rewatch. I mean, how's your feelings?
I mean, like, he's good until he's not.
Yeah.
And the handoff stuff is just weird. I mean,
right.
I kind of assume, like, you know, two botched handoffs in a game. We saw one last year, just one, as far as I can remember. It happened at a terrible time, so we all remember it. But
it's a teachable moment. And after the game, Harbaugh was like, yeah, he keeps doing it with one hand. And I yell at him, and then he keeps doing it with one hand. And it's like, all right, well, now, like, Grant Berry didn't spin the ball this week.
Now the cattle prod comes out during practice this week, and I bet Spate will have two hands on the ball.
I mean, the thing that kind of jumped out to me is that when I was done charting, I only had 4 inaccurate passes.
Yeah.
Now, all of those passes were terrible.
Some of them are spectacularly inaccurate.
But there were only 4 of them, and there's, like, some marginal ones in there. There was a throwaway that I thought could have been an IN, but I'd made it a TA. But the quantity of throws that are off isn't actually that high. It's just the severity of them when they are off.
Yeah. And it's bad when you're winging it 3 yards over your intended receiver, which he's
people
done
tend to remember
multiple
that.
Times. It does stick out. But the other thing that sticks out looking at the UFR chart is he doesn't have a bad read yet so far this season.
Yeah, that's pretty great, isn't it?
Like, I mean, that is impressive given the number of times that he's dropped back and that they really do ask him to go through progressions.
Yeah,
this is not a one read and out offense.
He's gotten some pressure. He's been making pre-snap checks. And he played a pretty good defense in Florida in the opener.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen one throw into coverage except, like, okay, he threw it into double coverage at Black when it was a two-man route.
Yeah, but that was going out of the back of the – I mean, he put it in a place where his other catcher incomplete and –
and
that's,
like,
all you can ask on those max protect throws, really.
Yeah,
if nobody's open,
willing to accept that.
Yeah,
like he hasn't put the ball in a dangerous position except when he's throwing it over the head of an open receiver.
Yeah.
So, The INX has been an unfortunate feature of the season so far, but I still feel like he can just cut down on a couple of those a game and cut down on the fumbles, and then we're talking about a guy who's in command of the offense, who's reasonably accurate, and has some guys who can make plays for him.
Yeah, and especially since, you know, when we go and look at the mistakes that he made last week in further detail, they're fixable. I mean, we talked about the handoff thing, but also just like a lot of his overthrows are just when he's in a clean pocket and for whatever reason doesn't step into the throw.
Or he resets. That was one of the major themes is like, okay, he had to move around a little bit.
And once he resets, he tends to lose some of his
mechanics. He doesn't step directly into throw. There was actually a really interesting comment, I think, on the game column, just talking about the various mechanical issues this guy saw. And he seemed like he knew what he was talking about. And then, of course, some guy was like, you suck. Because it's the internet.
You know, that'll happen.
I read it, and I appreciated it. And it seemed like the number of things that were going wrong was one.
Okay.
Like, that's not a very grammatical sentence, but we're just going to roll with it. There's only, like, one thing that's a problem.
Yeah.
And if he can fix the one thing, then he looks like a pretty good quarterback. And if you're one of those guys who's just, like, super mad and thinks that Spate is going to, like, continue costing Michigan, like, one or two touchdowns a game, I mean, I can't tell you you're wrong right now.
Like, no.
This is a trend at this point.
Yeah, I can tell you I have fundamental disagreements with how we choose to enjoy our pastimes.
Well,
but no, I mean, I understand the people who are frustrated with Spate. The somewhat inexplicable mistakes do tally up after a while, and those are hard to forget. At the same time, I'm not, like, outrageously pessimistic about him going forward or anything. I think, you know, even if he doesn't iron all of this stuff out, he's still an above-average quarterback right now.
Oh,
that caught you off guard.
I don't think he, like, was Spate above average against Cincinnati? I would say no. I mean, he had some pretty good stats, but he also was directly responsible for one turnover. And
yeah, I'm more thinking of the handoff stuff. I'm not concerned about.
We're disregarding the handoff stuff.
Yeah, disregarding that because we saw it once all of last year, and then it happens twice in a game, and that just seems like a fluke.
Yeah, I mean, you're going into this Air Force game, and you're kind of like, he might do it again.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll get into this more when we get into Air Force, but the concern with them is that their whole thing is to kind of speed you up a little bit and make you a little bit off, even when you do have guys running open. So, I mean, we are going to see Spate get tested a little bit just because they're going to fling a ton of pressure at him. So we will see if he has worked some of these things through.
Yeah, I feel totally exhausted about this topic, by the way.
Yeah.
And there's like a year and most of another year left of it, probably.
Yeah.
He feels like, I think some people misinterpreted when I brought up Navarre in the game column. Like, you got to stop trash talking John Navarre. I'm like, I'm not trash talking John Navarre.
No, like John Navarre
was solid. I'm talking about a guy who was an all Big Ten quarterback as a senior and still had people chasing him around being like, you suck all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Wilton Spate is now in that zone.
Yes. No matter what. No matter who the mistake is on, the finger is going to get pointed at him first.
Right, and there's always going to be throws that are kind of borderline good throws. Like, I thought the wheel route to Hill wasn't the best throw in the world, but it gave his receiver a chance.
Definitely gave him a shot at it.
And if it wasn't like a fullback, then maybe that guy is more able to understand that he needs to slow up and extend.
Yeah.
You know, but people are going to get on that one because it was a little short. It wasn't a perfect throw. And I think that kind of thing is going to be filed as a terrible throw, whereas with a quarterback that you're more understanding of, you kind of like, all right, that's kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
And that's his fate. And he cannot defy that fate, and nothing he does, unless he puts up like 400 yards and goes 20-21 against Ohio State.
Yep. And then they'll be like, that one, dude, that one.
That one, that screen you turfed on purpose. Got to make plays. Man, that would be awesome, though.
you just stared off into space for a moment right before you said that.
Very visual podcast.
We need to take down these chips and whatever and show them.
No, that ruins it. It ruins it. I'm just incensed about all this, but it does. Get some FaceTime for John Bacon's latest book.
It does.
About the great Halifax explosion. All right, we got to stop talking about Spate.
And the Halifax explosion. Let's get to Nolan Elizio, maybe?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about Elizio. So last week I had like a huge negative number for him in UFR, but even at the time I was like, the way I grade, I have to like give minuses for people who I think are setting other people up for terrible blocks.
Yes.
And that could be a schematic thing. It could be on the coaches. It could be RPS. It could be on the tight ends. There's always a level of uncertainty. And then I tally up the grades and I was like, oh crap. Cause I didn't think it was that bad. And then you see the huge number and that's like, ugh. So this week, Onwenu and Elizio had some problem with stunts,
mm-hmm.
but they caved in probably the best player on Cincinnati's defense.
Yes, and they were dealing with, I mean, like you said, Cincinnati was rolling out some big dudes on the defensive line, so
yeah.
They weren't getting tested as much in pass pro other than the stunt and twist stuff, but yeah. You know, moving those guys was not necessarily going to be easy because they're facing a 300-pound weak side defensive end.
Well, and, you know, I go back and I try to opt out of grading blocks that I don't know are certainly good or bad.
Yeah.
So often if you're on the backside of the play, you're just kind of like doing something.
You're just there.
Average,
yeah.
I just move on to the next play because I don't have time, really. And there were a lot of blocks from Elizio and Onwenu in this game that demanded that I go back and give them a plus. Where, Ty Isaac is bouncing outside for 9 yards on the other side of the line. And the thing that jumps out for me in the play is that they kicked the ass of that three sack.
Yeah.
Like, they put him 5 yards downfield. They got on a linebacker, and they looked like just maulers.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing they have on the right side of that line, it's some beef, you know.
Yeah.
Onwenu has an unusual percentage of it just himself, but they can definitely boost some people. And it was encouraging both that they were moving guys and that, at least in Lizio's case, he wasn't making many mistakes in the run game either.
No, I think he had a good grasp of everything mentally. You know, the stunts are something that they are going to have to work on. They did handle it a couple of times.
Including on the Perry touchdown, they picked one up.
So that seems like a good problem to have for a guy who just kind of got into the right tackle mix late in camp and a true sophomore in his second start.
Yeah, I mean, those are the things you'll see upperclassmen offensive linemen screw up. We got to see that a lot the last couple of years.
I mean, that's kind of the one downer, like, so we have these guys who are making mental mistakes, and I'm always like, all right, so they'll probably clean this up. And then it's always that probably that just sticks.
You know, hopefully there's a difference between Harbaugh O-line recruits and Hoke O-line recruits, and we see it in that.
Yeah.
But it is encouraging that, you know, those guys are definitely – physically, they're there. I mean, I don't think there's that much you have to worry about on that front. And then seeing the – in-game improvement on picking up some of those twists was encouraging because they were improving that on the fly in that game.
Yeah.
And they'll get tested quite a bit this weekend with that because Air Force is going to try to blitz guys from every conceivable angle. So we'll see again whether that holds up.
Yeah, and so Onwenu was even on the ground, and a lot of that was he had like two really big mental issues.
Yeah.
Like the pulling both ways, that was on him. But that's getting the wrong play call.
Yeah.
That's not identifying the wrong guy to block along the line of scrimmage, which we saw basically constantly through, like, the last 3 years.
Yeah, and long-term, like, Onwenu's going to get the playbook down. And
right.
And then it's about the identifying guys is a thing, something that's much tougher to be a natural at.
Yeah.
And for the most part, he's pretty good on that front.
So far, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, again, my grading is, like, I got to give out these grades because he basically...
Results-based charting.
Results-based charting. And that's... That's me trying to be humble, being like, all right, I don't know what the play call is. I don't know. I'm not a football coach. I have to, like, look at this and at least use that as a sanity.
Yeah, because if you start doing guesswork in UFR, it's going to be worthless.
But so that grade came out as a zero. I thought that was a great zero.
Yeah.
I was very happy with his zero on the ground because the things that he made mistakes on were really big mistakes. But they were infrequent, and when he wasn't making those mistakes, he was moving people.
Yeah.
So,
and you do grade on, I mean, not in terms of the actual grading themselves, but you do grade on a curve a bit with offensive linemen when you're talking about a true sophomore versus.
No, I mean, well, yeah, in general.
Yeah.
I don't grade on a curve.
No, but like in terms of what to take away from that, like a zero from Mike Onwenu in his second game as a starter is much more encouraging than like a plus three from Kyle Kalis last year.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point. So the right side of the line, I thought that was an encouraging development. I don't think that the guy they were going up against was anywhere near the caliber of Florida's three tech.
Yeah.
But I thought that guy was awesome.
That dude was really good.
And so hopefully they can solidify here and get rid of the mental errors and really start dominating before the competition level really takes up.
Yeah. They still got some time for that.
Yes, sir. And then the other thing that really kind of jumped out at me is that Michigan's crack sweep game was on point.
Yeah, that was extremely effective.
So they ran five of them, and four of them were big plays. One of them came back for a hold. And if that hold isn't made,
Probably still get a pretty decent play out of it,
right,
first
like
of all.
Either Hill like spends himself on that linebacker, or he runs through the linebacker like he does and goes to the safety anyway, and that could be a touchdown. There was the one where Ty Isaac was jumping over Sean McCune.
Yeah.
And McCune stood up.
He hustled too hard on that play.
That was exactly. I was like, "Oh man, just stay down, stay down.
You've done your job."
And if he doesn't stand up, that's 72-yard touchdown.
Yeah,
and they got a 50-yarder. They got a 30-yarder. They had an 11-yarder where they almost creased it.
Yeah,
they were outstanding on those. And I think a big part of that is guess who's back at left tackle?
Yeah, Mason Cole out there.
And Mason Cole in space was awesome as a sophomore, and he's even better now. I can't believe that the last one, the big one, where he checks the force guy, and then he just runs by him. Like, anyone other than Mason Cole, I'm like, he screwed that up.
Yeah, you biffed that. But
Mason Cole, I'm like, maybe that was on purpose because you're a genius. So maybe not. But one thing I did love that he did on that play is even if he checked that guy and he decided to run by him and he was wrong, he didn't change his mind.
No, he went straight for the safety and took him out.
So there are like a few like offensive line rubrics I've come across in my years, and one is never turn upfield.
Nothing good's going to happen when you just take yourself out of
right.
the play.
Like if you ran by a guy and that guy might tackle for loss,
it's already over.
Yeah, you've already lost that block. If you did screw up and someone makes a play behind you, then you got a 2-for-1, right? Like so you can go get a safety and maybe you get a really big play. Way too many times you see offensive linemen screw up the block and then have a long memory about
especially
it.
Young ones.
Yes. Especially young ones or guys who just never really get it mentally.
Yeah.
And Cole, you know, maybe he ran by that guy on purpose, maybe not, but he went and he got a thunderous block on a safety afterwards.
Results-based charting. That was a big play.
And so the crack sweeps were very, very good, and I think you're going to see that continue.
And, it's nice to have Ty Isaac be the guy running those, too, because get him out on the edge in open field like that and with some momentum. The defensive backs are going to have a tough time dealing with that.
Yeah, Michigan's personnel is really good for that because they have wide receivers who can really block. They have Hill, who's a menace on the edge, and now they have Cole, who's a factor there.
Yes.
And so they actually started off running a bunch of counters off of it, and then they went to the crack later in the game. So I'm excited to see Michigan continue running this play with seemingly ideal personnel. My next note is just Zentry with an exclamation point, which is it's not a prospecting name. That is
it's not.
Sounds like something from Zoolander.
Yeah, a little bit.
So Zach Gentry, what popped out when I looked at his tape was he was running routes.
Yeah, like he's got feet.
Yeah. So he gets the on his big catch and run, he gets the linebacker to bite outside, rips inside of him, and then that guy is gone.
Yeah.
Like Gentry is 2-3-4 yards past him, and that guy has no shot at a tackle. And then the incompletion where he had to dig out a tough pass from Spate because Spate was getting a bunch of pressure, he did the same thing to a safety on that one where he gets a lot of separation, and that one he just ran into the guy, gave him a little shove, and then he breaks the inside wide open. So,
and that's like a little veteran route running trick right there.
Like, I know that offensive pass interference was turned off in this game.
Completely.
But that was not going to be an OPI in any game. So he was really threading that needle between not getting separation and getting a penalty. And that's a really good thing to see from him early in his career as a contributor.
Absolutely.
So I'm excited about him. I've been excited about him since they moved him to tight end. And he's really starting to pay off in that. And I think his blocking has been
pretty decent.
Yeah, like
I mean, they're mostly matching him up with like smaller guys on the perimeter, but he's able to kind of engulf them. So
the jet sweep to Donovan Peoples-Jones, he was pretty much the only relevant block, except I think Crawford downfield.
Yeah,
and he gets a linebacker blitzing to him, and the linebacker meets him, and then he kind of like staggers backwards, and I'm like, that's not the way that's supposed to
go. Like, this isn't how leverage works.
I mean, he remained pretty well coiled, and I was impressed by that. And he won that block. And
it's tough for a 6'8 dude to stay low, and he managed to do it.
Yeah, so I think that's a pretty much optimal start for Zach Gentry.
Pack like 100 pounds out of that dude, and let's get him working out at tackle. Come on.
Gentry, no.
I'm kidding. No, we want the big ant running downfield, catching passes, and all that good stuff.
Because I think one of the main worries with him was that he was going to be like a Devin Funchess level blocker.
Yes, I think that was all of our primary concern when that position move was made.
And it feels like he's already in kind of the butt zone.
Yeah. I mean, trying is really step one there, and he's clearly trying.
I mean, yes.
Devin Funchess, excellent football player, did not try as a blocker.
No.
I mean, it's encouraging that Zach Gentry is making that effort. It would have been interesting to see Funchess try to play under Jim Harbaugh and how that would have gone over.
They just would have moved him to wide
receiver. Yeah, they just would have stuck him out there.
Because they wouldn't have tolerated that. They were just all right, you gotta play wide receiver. And then we saw some criticism for Higdon and Evans in this game. I kind of see it with Higdon because Higdon missed a pretty big cutback lane.
And those are starting to pile up a little bit for him.
He's got two so far
this
year.
He's got two like big play misses.
But he's got 11 carries, so that's not a great ratio.
No.
Evans, I thought, mostly was just submarined by blocks around him. I don't think.
Yeah, I feel like his first two, if people are concerned about his usage and stats for the first two games, and it just seems like he's been the victim of more plays that were blown up than anybody else.
Yeah, I think he's going to get his. You know, the one thing we haven't seen so far is we haven't seen a single pass to a tailback. There was one. Spate tried to dump it off to Higdon.
And it just got batted down.
Right, but no, like not on purpose, right? That was like a check down.
Yeah.
And we heard a lot about that, like how they're going to really use these guys in the passing game. Not so far.
Yeah, and they really, I mean, obviously didn't really have to against Cincinnati. You're kind of keeping a pretty vanilla scheme in that game, I would assume. So maybe they were not looking to bust out too many tricks. I mean, put the crack sweep and it's a couple counters to it on film and kind of leave it at that. I mean, given the amount, because they have been going empty a fair amount, I have to imagine that they're going to start doing more with that.
Yeah, it might just be a matchup thing.
Yeah.
Like they're waiting for someone to go man-to-man on that and they haven't done so far, or they had a safety over it or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see with Air Force, because Air Force will go man-to-man against that.
Yeah, that's interesting, but that is another
segment. That is another segment. I'm getting ahead of myself.
I think I'm out of offensive takes now.
Yeah, I mean this was the Cincinnati game. There's only so much to take away.
Yeah. Yeah. Grant Perry is good.
Yeah. Yeah, continues to be very reliable.
Very good person at catching balls.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're gonna take a break, come back, talk about the defense.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 3.3. Is that the number?
Yeah, probably.
Probably.
Maybe.
We're going to talk about the defense. I think the thing that you need to keep in mind when we talk about the defense in this game is they faced 16 drives, 15 of which were real drives.
Yeah.
And to give up two touchdowns and have a couple of shots at giving up two more is actually pretty decent when you consider that the two shots that people are concerned about, Michigan had pass rushers in the face of the quarterback on both of those. Mm-hmm. I actually couldn't believe that the second one at Hudson was as good of a throw. I thought he was throwing it away. Hurst is about to kill him.
I mean, as we kind of noticed, Hayden Moore can be a bit of a chuck it up and pray quarterback, and on that one, he just happened to chuck it up in exactly the right spot. It was a gorgeous throw, but he's not a particularly accurate quarterback.
No, I was getting mad on behalf of Michigan's pass rushers in this game because there were 4 or 5 sacks that I thought were certainly coming.
Right after the crap targeting call, two plays after, Gary turns the corner as fast as you possibly can, wrecks Moore, and the ball is already gone somehow.
I was outraged that was not a sack.
I was so upset.
Because that got the stadium hype. If that's like a sack, that's yeah. Like...
The only thing that salvaged it was going back and doing the gifts post and seeing that that Moore's head kind of didn't... Like, he looked up and then just kind of plopped it back down on the turf, and it was kind of like the Raptors mascot, like when his tail flops over. So that was nice. But that could have happened with him still holding the ball, too. So
That Hudson throw was the play after that, by the way.
Yeah.
So Hayden Moore is not a good quarterback, but
he's tough.
He's a tough guy.
Props to him for standing in there that whole game.
Nobody will ever question his toughness.
No.
So 16 drives, 15 real drives, 2 pick sixes, both forced by the defense.
Yes.
And very, very few holes. So Yeah, hypothetically, they could have given up 28 points. That's, for one, 14 net points. And
yeah.
Two, in almost two games worth of drives.
Yeah, and also you're talking about, I mean, one of the big things, both in terms of Don Brown's defense, how it's designed, and like the whole point of having this incredibly good defensive line is, yeah, they do cover for the defensive backfield's mistakes sometimes. Like
yeah.
That's one huge benefit to having an amazing pass rush.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, a couple guys got open deep. It's going to be tough for opponents all year to hit those guys when Rashawn Gary and Chase Winovich and Bo Hurst are up there putting heat on.
And I realize I'm arguing against, like, 2.8% of the fan base.
Yeah, you know, but we got to deal with that 2.8% more than most, you know?
I do think there were a couple of things that Michigan fans should be a little concerned about going forward. Number one was Mike McCray.
Yeah.
As I was grading this game, I was like, no,
this isn't going to go well.
I'm not happy about this. Not because, like, McCray was doing badly. I just hate, like, when I get
stick a guy with a number. And
yeah, I just hate when I have a big negative number for a guy. And McCray had a couple plays at the end of the game to rescue a large part of that. So mm-hmm. he was great on a late tunnel screen that he prevented from getting a first down. But three separate times in this game, he was supposed to be dropping into corner routes, and he did not.
Yeah,
a couple of times he was guarding the wrong route, and a couple other times he started running up towards the line of scrimmage.
Yeah,
as
which
he was
like one of them was on a 3rd and 11, and he's like scooting up to
10,
like
yeah.
5 yards, and that's there's no reason to be there really at that point. And then following the out route on another one, where
yeah.
it's just like, why? That's not it at all. Why are you doing that?
And you don't really expect that from your senior captain.
Yeah.
The good news is he did get one right at the end of the game.
Yeah, he forced a throw into a really small window that Moore couldn't hit.
Right, yeah. And so that was good for him, but it was also bad for him because it really clarified what he was supposed to be doing
yeah.
on those throws.
Yeah, provide quite the contrast to the earlier plays.
Confirm that, yeah, I was not
weren't being crazy.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy. Yeah. I was just seeing
it really
something.
Was bad.
I mean, the only thing I can think is that Michigan hasn't really run a lot of zone coverage until this game.
Yeah.
So they were almost all man a year ago. and they had to go more zone in this game because it was all pick routes constantly.
Yeah, we will be bringing that up again soon.
So maybe McCray hasn't actually been running the zone very much. And hopefully he can get it down. It's not that hard, especially when you're running it on 3rd and 10.
Yeah, and we did see in obvious contrast with Devin Bush, because Bush was getting the depth on his drops. He was doing fine in zone coverage. So
I don't remember him in any zone coverage. I did bring up the one flare route.
Yeah, well, he handled the pick route really well. That's
yeah.
right.
So he just got around that in a flash. And what I liked about that is he, as soon as the back started moving out, his first instinct was like, okay, where's my block coming from?
Yeah, he recognized that route combination. Like, I know what's supposed to happen when they're running that flare.
Yeah, so he knows that he just doesn't get to run out to the sideline for free.
Yeah.
He knows that there's someone coming for him.
There's
going to
be some traffic, and he avoided it.
Yeah, he did a great job on that. And then that was kind of a contrast with the wheel route
yeah.
that McCray got on.
Yeah, because wheel routes are tough in the first place. If you go under the pick,
yeah.
you have no chance.
I don't think Jabril Peppers catches up with that if he goes under the pick.
No. Yeah, you got to run like a 4-0 to catch up to that one at that
and
point.
And a guy like McCray, who's had edge issues for large parts of his career,
should be taking the easier angle anyway.
Yeah, just
by nature.
Yeah,
yeah.
You play it very conservative, and if they stop and they hit you for 10 yards, then yeah, they got you.
Yeah.
So he came in for the big negative grade. I don't think it's going to be a long term feature. I think McCray has certain limitations. But as we saw with the later zone coverage, he's not
yeah.
Hopeless.
And we've got a year's worth of evidence that he's a solidly positive player
yeah.
on the whole.
And, so. Like, I mean, a couple of the things that happened to him, I don't even really bother me. So he had a couple of instances where he was matched up against the running back in a bunch of space.
Mm-hmm.
And he misses a tackle, and he turns, like, a -3-yard play into a 6-yard play. I'm like, okay, that's going to happen.
Yeah, especially since he did a really nice job of avoiding a block to even get out to that play.
Right, so I gave him a push for that because it was 2nd and 12, and that was good enough. And then the holding call late in the first half, it's like, man, that's not on him. That's on Don Brown.
Yeah, like, Khalik Hudson should be the dude in that coverage. Send McCray on the blitz, and you don't have this problem.
And I don't know if they got confused or there's just a a problem with the particular call it was on. But I really hope that, I mean, you have Devin Bush, you have a 3-3-5 out there. I really hope that in the future they're looking to send anybody but McCray out of the box as a response.
Yeah. I mean, I know you want to keep some unpredictability in terms of who you're sending up front, but that was just too easy.
Yeah. And they did that for a large part of the game where you saw the back motion out, and it was always Bush who would go with him.
Yeah.
And that makes sense to me, and I hope that's what they do going forward. But that was kind of the big negative for a particular player. The other big negative for a particular play was, of course, the tunnel screen. And on most of those, it was just kind of like, they got us.
Yeah. It's like we blitz, they saw it.
So there was a five-man box and all five guys blitzed. There was a four-man box and all four men blitzed. Like, it's I didn't really see many opportunities for Michigan players to hold some of those down.
Except for Tyree Cannell doing so spectacularly.
Well, short of the sticks.
Yeah.
So that's something where I got a lot of RPS minuses that Don Brown made up for by getting a Don Brown hat trick,
mm-hmm.
which we have defined. We changed our definition.
Since the last podcast, yeah.
So a Don Brown hat trick is three sacks from defensive backs. The Viper counts because now a natural Don Brown hat trick is having three sacks from three different defensive backs. So
we got the first, but not the second.
Right.
This past weekend.
And
hopefully we'll get that natural before the end
of the mathlete tells us that this has only happened 36 times in the last 10 years of college football.
Only four last season. That's not many.
So
Michigan does have an advantage in that they are playing five defensive backs instead of four. It's still impressive that they got one.
Yeah, I feel like it is probably more common because there are space backers and stuff that should probably count.
Yes.
Because if we give them five.
Yeah, I mean, like Air Force is listing a 6 foot, 205-pound guy as an outside linebacker
right.
heading into this weekend. That's a safety.
So it's probably more common than that, but it's pretty rare. And Michigan got one in this game. Two of them on free runs where it's just like, okay, that's a sack, you lose.
Yep.
And the other one was Kalik Hudson going speed to power.
Yeah.
Or speed to dodge, basically.
Yeah, just an inside move that caught the tackle so off guard, he just went for the flat-out grab and still didn't get it.
Yeah, and that's the most impressive play we've seen from him in two games. I'm still like way on the Kalik Hudson bandwagon. I mean, he's given nobody any reason to.
Oh yeah, I mean,
get off of it.
I mean, just on that one play, I mean, he's been setting up linemen with just tearing around the edge on a speed rush the entire time he's been blitzing this season, and then to just rip back inside like that's going to be tough to stop for offensive tackles.
Yeah, and for the most part, his coverage has been excellent. For the most part,
he did get beat deep once.
So. The two deep shots in this game, one was a beautifully constructed slant, 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 and then they run a slant corner on Metellus.
Mm-hmm.
And Metellus gets beat, probably tackles, and is in the frame so that the throw does have to be a good throw. He misses.
Yeah.
And then Hudson just, this is another thing where I think it might be a lack of familiarity with zone. So he's backpedaling, and the guy runs by him, and he's like backpedaling for another two steps. And
yeah, the ball is practically in the air before he gets out of his backpedal.
And I don't think that's a physical thing. I think he's physically capable of doing that.
Yeah.
He just needs to hit the panic button a couple of steps.
Yeah,
earlier.
Just got to know you need to flip your hips a little bit earlier on that play, and he's probably with him.
But like for the 2.8% of the Michigan fan base that's like, this defense, I do think that is a potential chink in the armor.
Yeah.
Like, we haven't seen these guys tested a whole lot deep, and we got great coverage deep from all three starting safeties. You know, Peppers had some issues in underneath coverage every once in a while, and, you know, we had the big bust in the bowl game. But they were all capable, and it was difficult to hit them downfield for big plays. We don't know that these safeties are equally up to that task.
Yeah.
And so it is a little bit disconcerting that we saw those guys pop open deep.
Yeah, because it's not like Florida was going to be able to test them with the way they were set up on offense going into week one, and then Cincinnati just didn't really have the quarterback to hit those.
Yeah.
And we're really not going to see them get tested too much. I mean, Purdue might a little bit. We've seen some interesting stuff from them.
I think Purdue will do it a lot.
Purdue will test that. But in terms of teams that have like a realistically good chance of beating Michigan, it really isn't until Penn State where that's going to get Test on the back end. Seriously.
Well, Purdue's looking feisty.
Purdue is looking a little feisty.
Until Florida hires him mid-season.
That'd be wonderful.
No,
they could do that in the next week. That'd be great.
Be nice to them. They've been so bad for so long.
No, I'm sorry, Purdue. You deserve to have at least 1 year's worth of fun.
And then the other ways that the defense ceded yards were, there were three different ways other than the two things that we mentioned. Winovich got flanked twice when he was containing the quarterback, but the quarterback was not the player who needed to be contained.
That was a really nice play design.
Yeah, Michigan has seen it before, at least a couple times, but it's been a while. So I think you're going to see them work that out. Winovich is pretty capable in space. He did have that, like, completely awesome.
Just destroyed both the.
Like, he beat an offensive tackle. He destroyed the running back, realized the running back did not have the ball, and then destroyed the quarterback.
Yeah, I had assumed they were going to option him off on that play because he got around so quickly, but they were running it to the other side.
Yeah.
So he was not the person being optioned off. He just destroyed everything.
So he's a good space player. I think you're going to see him work that out. Watson was offensively pass interfered with basically constantly until they switched to a bunch of zone. And what are you going to do about that? Like, if you're
They're just flat out blocking him off the snap and nobody's calling it. There's pretty much literally nothing you can do as a cornerback in that situation.
I don't know what it would have taken for Watson to get an offensive pass interference call. He was straight up like tackled on one that went out of bounds. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen a guy who's a defensive back get hit harder without the ball.
Yeah.
So I was...
The little flag route touchdown that Cincinnati ran, he gets blocked straight into Tyreek Hill, so neither of them can get out on it. I don't know how you don't throw a flag on that play.
Yeah, it was
you're standing right there.
It was pretty bad. And then the other thing was the big long quarterback run. One, Tyreek Hill missed a tackle.
Yeah,
he missed a tackle doing the same thing he did on the awesome tackle from the screen.
It was a heroic attempt. It didn't land.
The difference there is he wasn't staring down a blocker.
Yeah.
So in that situation, you maybe want to come in a little bit less hot. And
also, it's a quarterback. You can probably take him out without just like kamikazeing in there.
But you know, you did it the first time and it was awesome.
Yeah, it looked real cool. I can understand the temptation.
You're feeling your oats. You're like, yeah, let's go get this guy.
Tyreek Hill feeling himself a little bit too much there, but given the game, he had a whale of a game otherwise. That was pretty understandable, but. He wasn't the primary bust on that play.
No, and that was a scrape exchange. They have Winovich off the field. They have Reuben Jones in. McCray chases the back, does a great job of that. And this is the on the verge of an RPS plus three play and a tackle for loss. And Jones forms up on the quarterback.
Who has already been taken care of by the scraping linebacker.
And I understand it. Like, that's your natural inclination. You weren't blocked. You're a defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
You've been drilled in to do this since you started playing football in high school, because now everybody sees this in high school, right? So like everything is form up, play both sides of it, string it out. That's in your football DNA at this point.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
But that not on that play call.
Not on that play call.
He should have been diving down, and he did not.
That should have been like the BC play against Notre Dame when
everybody just gets wiped out instantly. It's just total carnage.
Yes. So.
That like randomly popped back up into my like mentions because I'm tagged in that and my notifications. Somebody must have retweeted that today because it's popping back up. And it's delightful every time.
It is delightful. Almost as delightful as that guy who's just killing it on the Golden Girls theme song.
I have not seen
it. You haven't seen it? I just retweeted it. It's amazing.
I'll have to check that out.
The guy's like singing along to the Golden Girls theme song, and he is killing it. I have never done anything as well as this man that has sung along to the Golden Girls theme song. We're gonna get that on the podcast at some point.
Okay.
I guarantee it. I guarantee it. Oh, man. Combat sports. And then the other thing that jumped out at me in the UFR is that the quarterbacks were almost entirely irrelevant except for Watson. So Hill had the pick at the end, but he and Long were basically non-entities. They were not targeted. They went after Watson a lot, and Watson did good.
Yeah.
So he has he's in cover two, and he managed to break up a pass down the sideline. That's very good.
Yeah, that's not easy.
Like, live, a lot of people are like, oh, well, there was a window there. And like, that's not – that's like the part of cover two that's the weakest.
Yeah. And
if you can get a pass breakup on a decent throw there, you did a great job.
Yeah. Like the whole thing with cover two is you run a corner route to that spot.
Yeah. And so his ability to understand that the ball's coming in and get his head around and get a play on the ball has been excellent. He's jammed up a couple of routes where the guy just loses and there is no more route. So.
Yeah. He has seemed athletically up to snuff, which was a concern heading in.
Yeah, so far I'm still a little bit...
I'm definitely still leery about it, but we'll see. So far, so good. With the other corners too, I mean, Cincinnati, one thing they did have coming into this game was at least one like excellent wide receiver and another one or two that have proven themselves to be half decent. Mm-hmm. That Devin Grady can play. Number 21 for them is an athlete. And he was a complete non-factor in that game. So I have to think, we like you mentioned in the UFR, we got the D-level director for this one. So there was very little to watch downfield on passing plays that was in the frame. But
So I get so mad.
But I have to think, based on, watching live up in the press box where I didn't notice anyone getting beat from up there, I have to think that both Long and Hill did a very good job in that game.
Yeah, the cornerback situation now seems at least acceptable. That was one of our main concerns going into the year.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of reminds me of when Ryan Glasgow was beating out Brian Monet and people were freaking out about it. And it turned out that was actually
a good thing. This is a really good thing.
Like, Watson being competitive with these guys now feels like a good thing.
Yes. Yeah. It was alarming early, but given the way he has played these first two games, it's become comforting.
Yeah, this is definitely in the happy to be wrong category.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one final thing on the defense, we saw more four-man lines in this game.
We did. Brian Monet is not dead.
22 snaps, about a third of the total. And Brian Monet is a really good weapon to bring in on third and short. He took a double and like hurled it backwards, which I don't see very often.
Yeah. And the wonderful thing about that is then Mo Hurst gets single blocked, and that guy has no chance, so he gets discarded.
So Michigan gets a stuff on third and one, and that's like if you're running this 3-3-5, having the four-man line and the changeup that you can go to, one, offenses have to prepare for it.
Yeah.
Two, bringing in Man Mountain for 20 snaps a game where he's fresh for all of them, like that's a really good weapon to have, especially when you want to go short yardage.
Yeah, mitigates the main concern that they had about Brian Monet heading into the season, which was his conditioning and his ability to hold up.
Yep. And Solomon had an impressive play too. So that was So there's a little bit more.
He's flashing.
Yes, that's exactly what he's doing. All right, we're going to take a break here. We're going to come back. We are going to talk some hockey and hoops recruiting. Because it's on and popping, as the kids say. Except that was like 10 years ago. I don't know what the kids say right now.
But it's not that.
Yeah, it's not that.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Welcome. Oh, you did it. You did it. Oh, that was it. We weren't listening. Ugh, terrible. That was, we'll do it again. We're probably going to do it like in every podcast for like the rest of time. But okay. The people listening heard it. You didn't.
Yeah. I wasn't paying attention. I have no idea what's going on right now.
Well, what's
going on? I'm preparing for the next segment, Brian. We didn't have much time.
We were also eating.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of sad you put the lid on those. I was really enjoying them.
Sweet. Well, you can't eat during the show. Is that a problem for
you?
That's
been our live ad read. I'm hungry, man. I'm really hungry. I've only eaten a bowl of cereal today at 6 o'clock. I know that's a me problem.
Well, we have one more ad break, and you can have this spicy black bean lantana hummus.
Which is delicious, and I'm going to have more during the next break. And this is not even me trying to sell something that is sponsored. I'm just really hungry, and this is delicious.
Is that
our ad read for this week? I think we did it.
And
it's
good.
The best one we've done so far. We didn't mention any kittens.
Well, until now.
It's in the contract, okay?
It's legit hummus. It's not in the contract.
Not the one I saw, Brian.
You didn't see a contract. Lantana hummus is available at Bush's, Meijer, and other stores around. It's at Bush's. It's in the it's underneath the deli counter. That's where I get it.
Very professional podcast.
Well, I was telling people where I get my hummus.
I know. I was more commenting on myself.
Yeah. We got to work. Do we have like a censure mechanism that we can like put a vote through the House of Podcast Commons?
I don't think we do.
Pod Commons? Anyway, let's talk about hockey and hoops recruiting.
Yeah, we got some stuff to talk about, I guess.
All right. Go.
Thank you.
What's going on?
So basketball recruiting is actually kind of reaching the point where...
I'm eating on air now.
Yeah, after admonishing me for even suggesting as much. Brian's over here just munching on a freaking turkey.
Come on, let's go, let's go. Information.
So Michigan has three players in their 2018 class right now. Brandon Johns, the highest rated player, top 100 power forward out of East Lansing.
Yep.
David DeJulius, point guard out of Detroit. And then Taylor Curry, the power forward from Clarkston, who reclassified from the 2019 class. So people tend to forget about him when talking about this class.
I forgot about him. Yeah.
He's in it. And so they're down to probably two spots left in this class. They are taking a crack at the number one overall player in the class, R.J. Barrett.
That's going to happen.
They will get an official visit from him, and that will be the end of it. Because that's how these things go.
I don't remember who it was. It might have been Zag's blog or something. They surveyed various people about
Oh, yeah, the five teams most likely in order. And guess who finished last of RJ Barrett's top five?
The one that doesn't pay?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. So, we can probably dismiss Michigan's chances with RJ Barrett off the bat. If they do get him, we will make up for the lack of information we give now with a wild celebration. But it's not going to happen, so you can ignore that. The next guy who's probably the number one realistic target on their list is Iggy Brazdeikis, the Canadian wing, a 6'8 sharpshooter who can also take the ball off the dribble a little bit.
He's not just a shooter.
He is not just a shooter. He is, in fact, a little bit like a certain other Canadian.
He's burlier, though.
He is burlier. He's like 6'8", 220.
Like, he's a four at Michigan.
Yeah, he'd be, yeah.
Except Johnson's a four at Michigan. But like,
yeah, you know, maybe they'll just be big.
That'd be
nice.
That'd be a different thing.
But he's almost certainly the target Michigan Moats wants of the guys left on the board. He took an official visit last weekend. It sounds like it went quite well. So Michigan.
And he's got like Vandy and Florida.
Yeah, Vandy and Florida are the other two teams. Vandy, he's already taken an official visit to.
I feel pretty good about that. Like,
yeah, it seems like, you know, given the competition, yeah, Florida could be a factor.
I mean, they do have
a good program. But, I'm feeling pretty good about Michigan recruiting a sharpshooter from Ontario.
Yeah, like if Oregon was involved seriously, I'd be like,
Yeah, that'd be worrisome because they really have that Canada pipeline going. Yeah. But in this case, the Michigan seems to be, if not the favorite, then right up there. And that'd be a really impressive pickup to get Brazdeikis in this class. He's a good player. And then the other player they had on an official last weekend was Ohio wing Justin Ahrens. He is more of a just a shooter type, they can afford. They're looking to take one of those in this class, and one of the other more just a shooter types that they're looking at, Noah Locke, who's a bit smaller. He's 6'2", which is kind of the concern about him is that he's an off guard, but he's short. He's point guard sized. But he's a top 100, top 75 recruit. You know, Kansas was poking around him. He's got good schools after him. He comes in on an official visit tomorrow. He's also got...
He had some, like, stats.
He shot 45% in the EYBL on one of the highest volume of attempts of anybody there. He had the most made three-pointers with one of the best shooting percentages. That's a pretty good sign. The dude can light it up from the outside. And he actually had some pretty okay numbers from inside the arc in terms of being able to, when teams overcommitted, dribble in and at least draw some contact.
I mean, this is like AAU defense, though.
Yeah,
right?
But, you know, hey, they play some at those high-level things. Some. Not a ton.
I'm just worried.
He hits his shots.
I'm worried
his size is a concern, especially given
getting
that.
His shots off.
Yeah, it'd be less a concern if the other guard in the class wasn't DeJulius, who's maybe even generously listed at 6 feet. When you see pictures of him next to like Derek Walton, it's like, okay, this dude's small.
He's smaller than Walton?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. So we'll see. It'd be interesting in terms of how they piece this class together. Brazdeikis being in it would offset some of that because you've got a 6'8 shooter in there.
Yeah.
And you've got Brandon Johns already, and Johns has some range too. But they are kind of getting down to the stretch run a little bit there. Brazdeikis is down to his last visit or two. Aaron seems like he'd want to jump if Michigan asked him to. Sam Webb interviewed Noah Locke's father. And his father said that he'll be making a decision shortly after his visits are over, probably sometime in October. So this class is going to wrap up probably within the next couple months here. I mean, the next signing period isn't officially until November, but we could know before that.
And if they don't get Iggy, that's a big disappointment.
That's a big miss, especially since they didn't get Justin Hunter, who ended up in Indiana, and those were the two guys that they were really gunning for hard as kind of elite wings, guys that they consider elite wings to bring in. Getting Iggy is definitely priority one, possibly priority two as well. And then landing one of those shooters. They've still got a couple guys on the periphery. Nate Hinton, a 6'6 shooting guard from North Carolina. He'd fit in a little bit better from a size perspective than Locke. You've got Dwayne Washington, who was a Detroit area recruit who moved out to California. They offered, who's kind of on the, seems like he's kind of on the fringe of the radar right now.
But yeah.
Like Michigan makes a push, that could be another possibility.
So they're focused on these three guys, and there's some pull ripcord in case of emergency.
Yeah, and then, you know, also on the fringe is the number one recruit in the country who they will try for and not get.
Yeah. All right. So hockey recruiting, go.
Okay. there are these guys with sticks.
Yeah, guys with sticks.
And skates, and they move this little disc around.
Yeah. All right, Mel has come in, and he brought in Billy McCault, who is his number one recruiter at Tech, a guy who obviously is a Michigan alum and has a real reputation as a go-getter. Brian Wiseman, of course, was holding Michigan's recruiting together last year, the last 2-3 years.
A couple guys can very much sell the golden age of Michigan hockey to players.
And together they are doing work. I got to tell you, they flip Bodie Wild from a Harvard commit.
Tremendous name. We'll and start with that.
As they also are fending off the OHL for this kid. And Bob McKenzie just ranked him the number 10 player available in next year's draft.
That sounds pretty good to me.
The number 6 player available in this year's draft is freshman to be Quinn Nordin. Not Quinn Nordin.
Multi-talented, that Quinn Nordin.
Quinn Hughes.
Too many Quins.
Too many Quins. So Quinn Hughes is and he's 5'9". 5'9".
Are we talking about a Comrie here?
Defenseman.
Oh, we're talking about a defenseman.
Who is a top 10 NHL draft pick.
So we're talking about, like, Werenski plus here?
It's possibly.
Man.
Like, this guy is super explosive, great hockey mind, puts up tons of points. Almost a point per game with the U18s as a defenseman.
I assume he'll be wildly fun on the power play.
Oh yes, I've got my Eric Werner shades on right now for this kid, and he was actually a guy who's already committed to Michigan before Mel came in, but they had to fend off the OHL for him as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the best part about Quinn Hughes is his brother, who's 2 years younger, named Jack Hughes, who's playing for the National Development Team program. And it could be the number one pick in that draft. And Michigan is obviously hot and heavy after him.
Got the inside track a little bit there, possibly.
And now that he's signed with the National Development Team program, he's got a home for the next 2 years where he can develop. So that lessens the chance he's going to be in the OHL.
Yeah, a home where he can develop quite close to Michigan's program.
And in that 19 class, they just got a kid named Johnny Beecher, who is a guy that they got away from Boston College.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a kid who grew up in New York, so that's, you know, that's an away game right there.
Yeah.
And he's 6'4". He can fly. He's a guy who's also tracking towards being a first-round pick. He was actually never mind. But he's a guy who wasn't even on the radar until he suddenly committed to Michigan. They've picked up some 2020 guys. It's a little bit early to tell anything about them, obviously.
Yeah.
But they have done work in the 2018 and 2019 classes that I didn't think was possible. And they are recruiting with departures in mind very aggressively. Mm-hmm. So they have some guys who are talented guys who may be in the 2018 class, maybe in the 2019 class. They just got a defenseman who they were recruiting at Tech, who actually showed up late on the CSB list. So he was like 150th. He didn't get drafted, but that's a kid with some talent who's going to be around for a while, and they have him in the pipeline in case they need him. So the thing about Michigan's blue line is that next year they're going to have Hughes. They're going to have Wild. They have another kid committed named Matthias Samuelson,
mm-hmm.
who is Kjell? K-J-E-L-L.
Oh, God.
Jell?
That's a hockey throwback.
Yelly? I don't know. But he's his kid. And
yeah.
He's 6'5". He's also a potential top 15 pick. So next year they might have three top 15 picks on the blue line, along with Boca, along with, you know, other recruits that they're bringing in, along with a couple other seniors. So this could be an incredible blue line as early as next year.
And this is a significant uptick, even like over late red recruiting.
Late red recruiting, yeah. This is like
obviously prime red recruiting was about as good as it ever gets.
Yeah, but this is prime level red recruiting right now. And I'm not totally surprised because they brought in a guy who had a reputation as a killer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an alum, and they are really going after it.
Yeah, having Wiseman and McCault sell guys on building a program at Michigan seems like it would work pretty well.
I've heard that maybe they might have another big commit coming up in the next couple weeks.
Okay.
I didn't get a name, but stay tuned was the phrasing. So if they do get another big-time commit, even if it's not Jack Hughes, I hope it's not Jack Hughes because then you still might get Jack Hughes, then you're really kind of off and running.
Yeah.
So they haven't dropped the puck yet, but so far, so good for the Mel era. I think recruiting was kind of like the one question mark, right? Because he goes to Tech and he makes them a possession-dominant team. He improves them a great deal, goes to the tournament two of the last 3 years.
But it's more of a system thing than a recruiting thing, right?
Well, I mean, he obviously is doing something well in recruiting, but he's getting a lot of overagers. He doesn't have a ton of draft picks. It's a different kind of approach than Michigan has traditionally taken.
Yeah.
So you kind of wonder if he can reel in all the top national team kids. Turns out he can.
Yeah, off to quite a start there.
And if that question is resolved, it's really not if Michigan gets back to where it was, it's when.
Yeah.
And probably not this year because they don't really have a whole lot of talent at forward. But, you know, I think they could be a bubble team this year. And then next year when they get all these guys coming in, that could be.
That's an all systems go sort of situation.
So I think year two might be a takeoff year. So thanks. This was Aces Hockey Recruiting Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Take one more break, come back, and talk about the Air Force Falcons.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Ace, I wish to speak to you now of Andrew.
But Brian, we podcast in silence.
There's no way you're getting through this.
Find us at deobookkeeping.com and schedule a free consultation today. In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 3.3, live at the Bow Store on Main Street. That sounded professional.
Yeah, it really did.
I got something to get off my chest, though. That sounded less professional.
Yeah, it was too professional. You had to even it out.
So people have been tweeting at me like about how I don't know the song Mr. Brightside, as if I wasn't in the car jamming along to it in 2004 when you were like 10 years old, student section, 4 years old, whatever, young people who suck. That was Craig on WTK. Craig is super old. It doesn't sound anything like me. I know the song.
How are you confusing Brian and the old druid on WTK, people?
He is a druid, isn't he?
He is. You're the one who calls him like a thousand-year-old druid.
Have I done that?
Yeah, like in writing several times. I didn't pull that out of nowhere.
It sounds.
Oh, that's apparently Seth. Oh, okay. I apologize.
Yeah, druid is... I try to like keep my D&D on the down low.
I cover for saying I read Asterix and Obelix growing up, and that's true. I never played Dungeons and Dragons, but I read Asterix and Obelix.
What is that?
What is wrong with you, man? That's a great comic.
A comic?
Yeah.
A comic? With like talking boxes and bubbles and
stuff?
Yeah,
that, you know, like you turn the pages and the, you know, they go on adventures and there's these Gauls fighting against the Romans and it's great.
Comics.
But they got a druid.
I'm not a comics person.
Neither am I very much, but like I read like the two things I read growing up, or three, like Calvin and Hobbes, Tintin, and Asterix. Tintin didn't age so well.
Wait. Comics are different. You seem to be talking about a graphic novel, and not like Calvin and Hobbes. Like I like Boom County and that kind of stuff.
Okay, yeah. These are graphic novels, and then there's
yeah. Can you tell that Air Force graduated like 18 starters?
Yeah, we don't want to talk about them because there's like only two guys that we really know anything about.
So
I dove into one of their games from last year.
Yeah, which was useful.
It was interesting. we did get to see how they'll play because they don't change that.
No.
This is Air Force. So it's triple option offense, and with all of the terrifying things that come along with that.
Yeah.
They've got their two primary returners on offense. They've got a few guys who came back on the offensive line, but the two returning starters of note are their quarterback and one of their A-backs, which are the guys who line up on the wings and field the triple option pitch.
They're the flex in the flex bone. The bone!
So the quarterback, Arian Werthmann, entered midway through last year when their senior starter got hurt and what is an immediate upgrade as both a runner and a passer, which makes you wonder why he didn't start in the first place. But, you know, there was a senior ahead of a sophomore at Air Force, so I guess that's it. But
takes a while to learn the bone!
Yep. So, but he was immediately very, very good at the running aspect of it. He passed less often. Mm-hmm. But had a 6'4" mid-round NFL prospect to throw to when he did, so he was wildly efficient when he did decide to throw the ball.
14 yards in attempt.
Yeah, especially since, you know, Air Force throws are surprises every time, really.
Yeah.
You're never expecting Air Force to peel off and throw the ball, so when they do, they are going for big plays. And then their wingback, A-back, whatever you want to call him, the unfortunately named Tim McVay. They finally stopped listing him as Timothy this fall.
He's got a middle name. I mean,
that's
what I would have done.
Yeah.
Like if Denard Robinson Cook is somehow implicated in some sort of terrible thing tomorrow,
yes.
We're just going to call him Robbie or something.
Yeah, there could be something else there. McVay, not real flashy. But averages like 8 yards a carry, 8.5 yards a carry, because when he gets the ball, it's because
someone
the other team
out,
lost
yeah.
contain, yeah. and he's very decisive, he's fast, he gets upfield in a hurry. So he's good at eating up ground. He'll be the primary guy that they're running pitches to. And then everything else I have no idea about, because they turned over everybody. But we do know the style that they're going to run.
Yeah.
We do know generally what Michigan has to do to stop it. You have to play very assignment sound.
Well,
you want to get
people say that, but if you just come into it and you've got a bad tactical plan, the opposition will rip you.
Yeah, I mean, the key is also to be adaptive, because Air Force is going to be very adaptive. They have developed over, you know, the course of a century plus a number of counters that make you can't just focus entirely on stopping the inside veer. There are many other things that they'll run. So
Michigan's problem last time
was playing a safety in the parking lot.
And he's a single high safety, and his job was to get to the pitch back.
Which just wasn't happening.
Well, and then what they would do is they would send one of the flex guys out to block the safety.
Yeah.
And they got a bunch of chunk plays when Kovacs didn't get over the top of that. And then the big pass that they got, and then the guy fell down for no reason? That was the natural counter to that, because Kovacs sees this action and he sees the flex bone.
And he has to start taking off early, because otherwise he's not getting there.
And the guy just goes whoop, and then he's wide open downfield. And Michigan did that the whole game.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that Michigan has in their advantage here is Michigan's shown a four-man front. They've shown a three-man front. They've shown two high coverages. They've shown single high coverage. Don Brown has a lot of stuff to throw at these guys, so you can't just pick the thing where you're eventually going to kill Michigan for a big play.
Yeah, and he's also seen a triple option team in the Air Force mold relatively recently. Boston College played Army in 2013. Unfortunately, there was only a minute and a half long highlight reel that I could find from that game with one play that was a big play for Army. So I can't tell you how Boston College defended them the whole way. But in this play, they were essentially lined up in a 3-3-5.
Right.
So
this is 2013.
This was 2013. And notably, both safeties are within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage.
That was his first year at BC.
Yeah.
When they were very bad.
Yes. Yeah. That was an awful BC team that he took over. They were quite competitive with an awful Army team in that game.
Yeah.
But you know, there's not much to take away from that this much later, except that Don Brown will adapt to the option offense in a way that DJ Dur- or in a way that Brady Hoke maybe did not.
I only bring it up because Don Brown has the learning curve, right?
Yes.
So, like, what happened against Army in year one is not indicative of what would happen in year two. Or
yes,
year three.
He was not able to throw the kitchen sink them like he probably will tomorrow. So, Michigan's saying, I mean, you need to win up front against these guys, and Michigan should be able to do that.
Gary
Hurst and Winovich are both remarkably quick for a three-man line and remarkably strong for a three-man line. And one of the big things, especially Hurst has gotten much better. There were problems early in his career where he'd get cut blocked and wouldn't get off of it. And he has improved in that regard. And that is going to be a huge key, obviously.
Yeah, he had a tackle for loss
against Air Force.
Where they
tried to cut him and it did not work. And we might see a lot of stuff like that tomorrow, because he's going to be the guy responsible for the dive on a lot of plays. That is the first read. They're just going to try to cut you, get you on the ground, and get that going. But if you can get over that cut block, then you really start screwing up what they do next. So if you can control the A and B gap, force them to get out wide, and then have your outside linebackers, safeties, cornerbacks playing sound and staying in their lanes out there, you should be successful.
And if you can get Devin Bush to the quarterback, like, I think that's a good matchup for Michigan.
Just by the way that Don Brown plays the mic by alignment, where he's 5 to 7 yards off the line of scrimmage, that's probably going to be his responsibility, and he'll have the time and angle to get over there.
Yeah, so Michigan, just funnel everything, make the quarterback carry the ball 30 times.
Yeah.
And have Devin Bush go get it.
Yeah, don't let McVay get outside. The corners are just going to have to basically stand on the sideline, start pushing in, and make sure that they don't get edged.
Yeah.
I'd expect Michigan might end up playing more. I guess it won't be a pure zone, but Don Brown does like to run that cover two trap where you basically got those corners as dedicated run defenders in the flat.
Yeah, you're going to see that.
We'll see a lot of that, I would guess, tomorrow. And that's probably the deal. And that also has the benefit of keeping two safeties relatively close to the line of scrimmage. So.
Yep. And, I mean, Michigan is going to get got by these guys.
Yeah, I mean, this is an offense that every once in a while, you know, someone's going to bust a lane. Yeah. You know, they're going to run a play action, and your safety's going to take a false step. Like, they are going to hit a big player, too. They are going to get a chunk run here or there. That's just how this offense functions. But as long as you can keep those to a minimum, force them to try to hit big plays when they do have to. If you can knock them off schedule early,
yeah.
Their pass plays are all long developing. I think Worthman took sacks on about 15% of his dropbacks last year. Now that is a very small sample,
yeah,
but that's a huge number. And that's going against defensive fronts that are not Michigan's, and against defensive coordinators who are not Don Brown. So taking control of those early downs, you know, just keeping them from getting 5 yards on first down, setting up where they can just continue to run the ball. If you make it so they have to drop back, they're in trouble, especially since they did lose their NFL prospect wide receiver, and there is not an obvious replacement for him.
Other side of the ball, it's going to be familiar.
Kamikaze ball. I mean, they really...
I don't have a choice, though.
They don't. They have one returning starter. It's one of their inside linebackers. That's it. And their whole defense, the whole philosophy, and it makes sense given what they run on offense, is they're going to play a cover one man, and they're going to blitz a bunch of dudes, and they're going to try to take away the run at all costs. I mean, it's kind of Don Brown's philosophy, too, just taken even more to an extreme.
Yeah.
Where they're going to do everything they can to stop the run and just dare you to try to hit big plays on them with rushers in your face through the air. So, but they also, with their aggressiveness in the Boise game that I was watching from last year, one of the Air Force's blitzers screwed up a run fit on the first play, and Boise rips a 55-yard run down the sidelines and gets a touchdown on the next play. They don't have another successful run in the game after that.
Not one.
But they also, they fell behind. They started throwing the ball. Their quarterback was not doing a great job of handling Air Force's pressure.
No.
And this is kind of, this is where you get into the concern if for some reason Michigan does fall behind in this game. If they're having trouble establishing the run, I don't see that happening.
Yeah,
I think Michigan has too much meat up front for these guys. I mean, they're playing a 263-pound, 5'11" nose tackle.
Meat.
I mean, he's, you know, and I know they slash in and they bring pressure from everywhere, but that guy's going to get moved a little bit.
So I think Michigan's approach here is going to be a lot of extremes.
Yes, I think there are going to be some drives that are frustrating because they get knocked off the field relatively quickly, but they're also going to hit some big stuff.
I was also talking about the personnel.
Oh, yes, absolutely, because you're going to want to spread these guys out, go five wide on occasion, make it so it's obvious where their pressure's coming from, and also they're not going to be able to match up man-to-man across the board with all the weapons that Michigan has, and they're going to try to do it anyway.
They're just not going to.
I mean, this is what they do.
Doesn't zone seem like a better fit for their situation?
You think so. I mean, they will run some three deep stuff, but they really are just – they're pretty predictable.
So they're going to, like, man up Donovan Peoples-Jones and go with it?
Yeah. They're going to do that. I mean, they might try to drop some linebackers into zones underneath, but that takes away from what they want to do, which is even if you have guys running open, they want to make that irrelevant by getting pressure on your quarterback.
This feels like a big game for Grant Perry.
Yeah, the route artisan aspect of his game should come in quite handy here.
Like catch and run.
Yeah, quick open. Hitting stuff over the middle. I think this is going to be a big game for the tight ends. I think we're either going to see Gentry or Eubanks or somebody get a big catch up the seam because of how aggressively Air Force's safeties play the run. They tend to take a couple steps forward at the snap almost no matter what.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, so there was one of the plays I clipped for the film post was a pretty simple play action play with a tight end running up the seam, and the safety who was in charge of covering the tight end took an initial step up and then took like another false step forward towards the line of scrimmage and then just had to flat out grab the tight end as the guy was running by him, or it was going to be a screamingly wide open touchdown. And that was one of their two excellent safeties from last year. Those guys are gone.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with inexperienced safeties. Now, inexperienced at Air Force just means you're probably a senior who hasn't played yet.
Yeah.
But these are still guys who have not gotten many game snaps. They are coached to play very aggressively.
And they've seen VMI so far.
Yes, they have played one team that does not have a pulse. So it really, as long as Michigan doesn't screw up too much in pass protection and Spate just plays within himself, they're going to put us points.
So the other half of the personnel extremes is, you know, you could see them go with, like, a lot of big formations, even goal line stuff.
Yes.
Because you've got the three tight ends, and two of those guys are going to be able to get downfield. If you can make them bite up, and then when you have all those guys across the line of scrimmage, you know, you've seen goal line plays, right? It's really hard for guys to, like, just shoot into the backfield completely unfettered.
Yeah, and given how often Air Force sticks eight or nine guys in the box anyway.
Right.
It makes sense to just kind of load up and be like, okay, we'll go one-on-one with you.
Let's see what happens.
Good luck with your 260-pound nose tackle.
Yeah. So a lot of five wide and a lot of big sets, and we'll see if Michigan can either push them around or outrun them or both.
Yeah, this might be one of those games where like 12 different guys get one or two receptions just because Michigan is throwing so many different personnel packages out there that we're just going to see the ball get spread out naturally.
And I have some concerns about this game, but I feel like this is not the same program that it was in 2012.
Yeah.
Obvious.
Yeah.
Obvious.
Yeah. You know, I think defensively their approach is going to be very different, obviously, and that is going to be the biggest difference in this game. And then offensively they've got a guy who knows what he's doing and just enough talent, I think, to overwhelm a very inexperienced and small Air Force team.
Yeah, and if things don't work out the way we want, we'll have another reason to complain about this, right?
Yes, we will.
At least now this will be the last time I ever bring his name up, probably.
There is no way that's holding.
It could happen. You don't know that. It could totally happen.
And I could start flapping my arms and fly back in my parked car.
Right.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook. We would like to thank our sponsors, The Bow Store, Underground Printing, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshore Lending, Human Element, Lantana Hummus, Michigan Law Grad, Deo Bookkeeping, Ann Arbor Elder Law, and Peak Wealth Management.
Who's got it better than